This is Good Charity, Bad Charity.
Supporting you to support others.
My name's David Prest.
My name's Keith Davis.
My name's Camilla McGibbon.
So who are we for?
We're for anybody who's ever given to a charity, worked with a charity, been a member of a charity like the National Trust, been rescued at sea, had their cat neutered, or called a helpline. In other words, all of you.
I've never had a cat.
No, I wouldn't support a cat. I like dogs.
I've never been rescued at sea.
It's a bad charity, yes?
Yeah.
We're agreed. This is a podcast which is aimed at the charity sector. And I don't think there is anything quite like this, do you?
No, I know of nothing like it, and I've been working, as Camilla has, in the charity sector for a number of years. And all we want to do is help and make you better.
I've been a journalist for 25 years. I've always been fascinated by charities and how they work and how they develop and how they grow, how they become all dominant and how they afford huge TV advertising campaigns and billboards. And at the back of my mind, I wonder how they're being run. And I suppose that's really what we're talking about, isn't it?
We're also talking about Henry VIII, because Henry VIII, bless him, in his monasteries chopping down of, left people in situations where they needed money. So a lot of charities started out, certainly the ones I've been involved in Southwark, started out as of the parish. And then these things evolved so that, for example, in Southwark, we've got settlements, which were started in the 1880s by women who couldn't have property and couldn't do anything, but they went out into poverty-ridden areas.
This is really interesting because we are sitting in a studio which is embedded within a chapel which was set up by the famous Victorian philanthropist Octavia Hill. What could be more appropriate?
Yep.
This is the history of charity in this country.
Yeah.
It's sort of, there's a bit of an epicentre here, isn't it?
There is, and she did a lot of work because obviously you've got the local charity that is still going in her name and trying to help and feed and, you know, give better lives to those people that are still living here. And that for me is the bit of about charities is why? Why are they there? What are they supposed to be doing? How are they going to do it? And how are they going to demonstrate they're doing it well?
So this is good charity, bad charity. Define our terms.
In terms of being a good charity, the difficulty is you won't necessarily see it because it'll be well run and it will be well managed, not unlike a business. But who's going to be well running and who managing? And those people, unlike a business, are volunteers. They're trustees. They don't get paid. They're supposed to have some kind of knowledge of the area that we're interested in. But sometimes they come on board because people go, you know what, we need a trustee. Do you want to be one? And you go, okay, it sounds good. I don't actually know what it means. I don't know what I'm going to do. But I've got a good feel. I've got a good vibe.
So this
That's
is like,
not a good charity.
So this is almost like the honour of being, okay,
I must be
one of the great and the good.
The great and the good.
I'm chosen. Is that the attitude that you think a lot of people have?
Oh, I do. And I think a lot of people are thinking, down the line, maybe there's the OBE.
Keith Davis, OBE?
Yeah.
Are you?
No. Freedom of the City of London, but I'm not OBE.
That's enough.
But
you can drive sheep.
I can drive sheep over the bridge.
Yeah.
I think there's too many. I think there's too many charities. There's too many charities, and a lot of them are trying to do the same sort of thing. And that means that there is probably a need there, but I don't think they're coordinated. I don't think we've got a clear view of how they best can work together. And I think you then go on to a bit that Camilla was saying. You've got the founder, you know, who, for some good reason, maybe their son, their daughter, their father, or whoever, has died in certain circumstances or need help, and they want to set up a charity. You know, great idea, but, you know, how do they at the end deliver it? You know, because I've seen a lot of people get into these situations where they get themselves in a bit of a mess because they haven't got the right framework to go forward with.
A lot of the things that you're saying, Keith, I'm guessing, are almost heresy for people to talk about in the charity sector.
Yes, I think they are, because the charity, as we say, is soft and fluffy, where actually the charities to deliver have got to be, as Camilla was indicating, you know, got to be part of a business. They've got to have a plan to say, how are we going to get from A to B? How are they going to get into the real needs of that community or that issue within the community?
But Keith and I, we've talked about this endlessly. The unique selling point of a charity is its unique emotional selling point. So we get involved or we give money because our heartstrings are tugged, you know, whether it's the poor dog, whether it's the person who can't get water, whether it's the person who's got a disease. So that emotion, the difficulty, I guess, is that that emotion by itself takes over the need for a plan. Because somehow a plan is a rigid thing that sounds far too logical, and we'd really rather be soft and fluffy. And so we get to a stage where we're giving all, this is what we feel as volunteers, as donators, but we're not somehow entitled to ask for what we're getting back, because that sounds mean, it sounds logical, it sounds hard-headed, and we don't want all that. We just want the world to be a lovely place. And it won't happen unless we get the governance right.
I'm really interested also in the ethics of this thing, because we talk about, there's almost that assumption, isn't there, that, okay, you're running a charity, the charity is ethical.
Not not necessarily.
So do charities, can charities behave, and is it advantageous for them to behave in an unethical way on occasions?
Should they?
No.
Do they? Yes.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, that you always want them to be above the line, if you like, of what they're doing. But some charities, big charities, have fallen below that line very quickly just recently, where there's been, you know, how do you bombard people with the applications you put to them about, give me money, you know. And the more you see the pictures of, you know, sad scenes, you know, and the way people have been using that has created a lot of negativity around supporting good charities. And I think that's a shame.
So we're talking about the persistent phone calls, the persistent mail-outs, and there's one case of an individual who took her life as a result of being bombarded and bombarded by constant calls on her emotions, almost pulls on her emotions to give money to various charities. I mean, I was, only this week I was approached by my former university. I'll keep it nameless, but you'll probably guess. And the university asking for money in their usual way to give into a scholarship fund, etc., etc., etc. And I pointed out that I found it very difficult this year in particular to give to that university because their vice chancellor was paid the highest possible salary in the United Kingdom, was paid this extraordinary amount of money. She has since resigned from
retired.
Her post. And gone to do some research work. So, I feel a little bit better about it, but I still respond to that by not wanting to give to that charity. So the responsibility of almost like the charities to look at the holistic picture of how their organisations behave is possibly part of that.
Having said that, though, I think there is an argument that says some good charities are good businesses, and the only way you get the good governance there is by paying the appropriate money. Because if people volunteer, the challenge is they are volunteering on their time. Therefore, you don't necessarily get the right people, the right level of people, right level of commitment, because it's a given charity, you know. So I think there are some balances to be had in saying, if I'm running a charity that is a big business as well that gets money in, then you pay the right money for it, but you hold them accountable.
But why would you think, though, that, to go back to your previous point, David, why would you think that all ethics have to reside in the charitable sector? Because the flip side of that is kind of, well, business, you know, they kind of screw us over. So that's fine because that's business. But in the charitable sector, we're not going to get screwed over because that's where our ethics lie. And I totally agree, our ethics should lie there, but our ethics should also lie in business. When it comes to things like money and how much you pay your staff, that is a whole other ballgame. I'm involved in a charity who's just taken on senior staff at an incredibly high level. not highly paid, I might add. And there seems to be an assumption in the charitable sector, again, that emotion is enough and these people don't actually have to eat. But they are highly imaginative. So what I am getting, if you like, as a trustee when I have a senior team is somebody who comes to me with an idea, with various options, how to put it into practice. And for that, you want to pay them £2.95. No, I think that's unfair. And I don't think that as a funder, we should think that way. We should think that, great, we're getting people on the cheap.
That's a good point because, you know, if you take a lot of charities, they can't exist unless there's some corporate funding for the day-to-day running.
Yep.
And if they haven't got that day-to-day running, you know, they're not going to be a good charity. You know, they could end up being the bad charity that we're talking about here today. I mean, I think Greg Dyke made a good point a couple of weeks ago when he said...
Currently the chairman of the Football Association.
Yes, he is. But he's also doing something else as well, I think, now.
On the funding
regime, yep. Yes. And he said, how much, if I give you a pound, are you going to spend on the people? You know, and how much is going to be spent on the corporate costs of running it? And that's a real interesting one because you need both. You know, and I know a lot of people say now, and some, you know, grant aid bodies are saying it's all got to go to the end user. Well, unless some of it goes in the centre, you know, you ain't going to have a charity that's going to do it.
And this comes back to accountability. I mean, you know, I, like many people of my age, probably donated when Bob Geldof banged that coffee table at Live Aid and said, give us your fucking money.
Yeah.
I gave some money.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, the story is starting to drip out that all of that Live Aid money, some of it was going to Ethiopia, some of it wasn't quite going to Ethiopia, some of it was helping to prop up the rotten Mengistu regime in Ethiopia. And suddenly the tarnish goes a bit and charity and giving to charity starts to feel a little bit like a gamble in the unknown. But then do we really expect people giving money to look at the end user, to look at all the small qualification points and analyse how much of that charity is going to the right place?
I think you're right, though. A funder isn't going to sit there and go, unless it's an institutional funder, but an individual funder is not going to say, show me your accounts. Let me see your accounts. Have you got a good policy about, you know, trustee involvement? Have you got a conflict of interest policy? Let me see your policy list. They're not. But a good charity would probably have a checklist, maybe a sheet of A4, that a good funder, and if you're going to put a pound in the box, that's not what I'm talking about, nor am I talking about Bill Gates, because he'll probably have a complete institution that goes into depth in all this kind of thing. But I think your average person who might give, say, more than £100 or around £100 should have an idea of whether the charity that they're giving to is going to deliver what they hope and what they have now got a stake in. Because I think that sort of person is a stakeholder. And I think they shouldn't be taken advantage of by sending 500 messages. Could you give a little more and a little more and a little more? And a lot of charities profile people.
Yep.
So they say things like, well, if you live on X Street in the middle of Belgravia, let's say, you must be extremely wealthy. So what we'll do is we'll work up a profile. And you drive a Maserati and so forth and so on. So now you have given £300 to a particular charity. We think you could probably give £300,000 now. Is that ethical? Not sure. But if you were going to go that way, you better build your relationship with that person first.
Keith, have you been profiled?
I'm getting a load, yes. And I think that's the frustration at times because, you know, I want to get involved with what I want to get involved in. From a personal point of view, it's what's on my priorities. I don't want to be bombarded by everything and everybody. And some of the big ones that are sending me Christmas cards and saying, here's the Christmas cards, please donate to us. You know, that for me is a con, you know, because you feel slightly guilty, but some of the Christmas cards aren't that nice. You know, so it's
I don't like your Christmas card, I'm not giving.
Who do you want to have in this room? Who do we want to call to account and say, you're doing a good job, you're doing a great job, or do you know what? I'm uneasy about the job you're doing. Tell me who you would have in your top five lineup.
Number one patron in our country?
Yep.
Prince Charles.
Okay, Prince Charles. I get the fact that he puts his name on the letterhead of lots of charities. What I don't get is what those charities are really getting for that. What do you think, though?
I actually think that is the key question, David. I think that he is perceived as having an enormous amount of pulling power. That he says, if I can set up a meeting, I will set up a meeting, and you will be damn sure that people will come.
So things happen.
Things happen
when Prince Charles is at the helm.
From my experience of working with a number of charities...
Oh, I thought he was going to name check there and say that he worked with Prince Charles.
Well, he has. We both have.
Okay.
The issue is that I know that those chief execs of some of those charities want the names and addresses in that person's little black book, okay? That they know there are going to be potential funders and they could be mates of his. Therefore, they've got a bigger probability of getting some money in from it.
All right.
And fine, you know, from that point of view. The other ones I would name would be some decent pop people, you know, if I can use pop, you know.
Bono?
You could go to Bono, you know. You could go to even someone, if you're looking locally, say Tom Jones, if you're looking for sunk in Wales, because he would have, you know, some influence.
Tom Jones do stuff for charity? I've no idea. I mean, he's a charity gigs, probably.
But one assumes he is linked to some. I was just thinking of a Welsh link.
So you're thinking of names that you would want to pull in if you were...
Yeah, I think people like that say, OK, what have you done in the past? What has worked? What has failed? Let's try and learn from that, and so that we can get some of the bad charities onto a lineup that says doing this might make you a bit better or, in the end, a good charity.
Well, look, on our wish list of people we want to have a guest on this programme, on this podcast series, let's put Bono in there.
Why not?
Well, I'd like to see some government people around this table. Some civil servants who get to make the recommendations. Some clarity about the hoops that have to be jumped through. Because let me tell you, two charities setting up an emergency fund is two charities setting up an emergency fund, and it gets delivered. And 2 seconds later, you bring in government, and everything slows down. And the meaning of the word emergency becomes a long, drawn-out, multi-syllable thing, as opposed to something like that.
And that's the challenge for it, isn't it? Because they would always sit back. You know, I can speak as an ex-local government chief exec, you know, that says, you know, God, I've got to justify this somewhere down the line. You know, so you get a justification demand rather than an emotional demand of, God, I really want to support these charity. I really think they're doing good work. I really think we can actually help them here. Where the other side of it is, my head is in this noose if I spend this money wrong. And that's the sadness.
Well, this is quite interesting. With your local authority experience, how would you view things like Grenfell, the responsibility of the local authority to respond when they are also responding in a defensive way in many ways? How do they juggle that?
That's really interesting, because you've got a split there. You've got the justification of why I put that cladding on the side of it and the justification of, we really need to help our community. Now, for me, it's about how could I guarantee that the money I was spending was going to, you know, help. And we talked earlier about the problem was that there was some guy there who actually said his family died and tried to get money out of it. You know, so it's a difficult one for them at times.
But I think the local authority, due respect, will start from the point of view that everybody is trying to defraud me. I think that's my sort of emotional gut on this one. I think that the charity view will be, this is the need, we have to meet it, and we have to meet it now. If we have the trust of other people and we have the capacity to do it, let's do it. Whereas governments tend to go, what's the auditor going to say?
I think that's fair, and I think they've also got this bit about, God, I've got to do something now, because I've got to be seen to be doing something to show that we are the caring authority.
Yes.
And then, you know, the second question comes back in of, OK, when are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? Is there going to be any loss in that delivery? And the answer is probably yes to all those, you know, because if they give too much, they're going to get criticised. If they don't give enough, they get criticised. But it doesn't stop the need in this country for us to support the vulnerable, whichever way they go. You know, if people would argue I wouldn't support an animal charity because, you know, surely we should be supporting human beings first. But some people's emotional links are different, you know, and that's where, you know, you've got some animal charities that are getting a lot more money than charities dealing with people.
So donkeys or food banks?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a dilemma, isn't it?
You know, and how can you argue and justify against either of them?
So just to sum up, this is a podcast. It's a new podcast. It's called Good Charity, Bad Charity. We're shaking the tin. We're shaking up the sector a little bit. You've been listening to Good Charity, Bad Charity. My name's David Prest.
My name's Keith Davis.
My name's Camilla Gibbon.
We'll be back soon.